Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. First Saturday of November.
Happy first Saturday.
Already, isn't that insane? I love it though. This fall is so beautiful.
Yeah, well, I don't know how happy I'll be because what follows?
Snow and winter. I hate it.
Four-letter word, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know, it's coming. It's coming around the mountain when we come.
And you know what else is coming?
What?
While I'm thinking about it, while it's fresh on my mind.
Yes.
We, once again, are moving the show. Sorry to tell everybody. I know that folks develop habits, and you know, a lot of times when my favorite shows move, Last Man Standing.
We're not speaking from experience, clearly.
It's kind of traumatic because you have to start new habits and things like that.
Oof, but, way to sell it, Bri.
Yeah, we're moving. It's going to be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Wow, we have a 13-hour show? Sorry.
No, just an hour.
Oh, okay. So 8 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Yeah, and that starts the first Sunday of December.
So we've got four more weeks, assuming November has four Saturdays in it.
Yeah, so you can savor these last few Saturday shows.
And then we'll be on 24 hours later on Sunday.
Yeah,
but, and you can savor us then.
Yeah, but knowing our history, we'll probably be back on Saturdays.
Yeah, somewhere. We are a little fickle with our time slots, aren't we?
We don't let grass grow under our feet.
Through no fault of our own, we should add. We just sort of go along for the ride.
Yes, so. We do.
And we hope that you will come along with us.
Yeah,
because it's always exciting,
yes.
Like a roller coaster.
It is indeed. And what's going on with you this week?
Oh, not a lot. We had Halloween this week. Kiddos were doing their thing. Reese is now old enough to kind of enjoy it on her own. So she and some girlfriends dressed up as Alvin and the Chipmunks, like way to kick it back old school. And so they went out trick-or-treating. And then my son dressed up as a Lego Ninjago character, which I don't... Did I tell the story last week? Well, it's not really a story. It's just kind of a musing of mine. But last year, my son, I made his Halloween costume.
Oh, right.
I did
yeah.
share that, didn't I? Okay, I won't rehash the details. But yes, I gave in this year and did a store-bought costume. And, you know, he looked polished and shiny, just like all the other polished and shiny little children. No more homemade Halloween costumes, it seems.
No.
They are extinct in the world.
Well, for the most part, yes.
For the most part. I still admire a good Halloween costume that's handmade. You know, like the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it. My best memories as a child sitting in my living room on a stormy fall night and fireplace going with mom and the sewing machine, putting our costumes together. It's one of my favorite childhood memories.
Yeah, and before we came on the air, you were talking about I guess, Halloween dream that you had. It was pretty gory.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah, so I had this awful nightmare, and I have anxiety when I sleep, and so I often will wake up kind of in this panic mode, but I think that I had passed a neighbor's house who had a very extensive Halloween display, and it somehow manifested into my anxiety that came out in my dreams. So I had a dream that I was at an airport and everybody walking around me was decapitated. And there were like dismembered body parts all over the airport. And it was just, and it wasn't like, oh, this is kind of cool. It was a terrifying, like it was a full-on nightmare. And it just was a very like hostile environment. And it was really, really, really creepy. And I have not been able to shake it for like 2 days. I'm replaying it in my mind. And, you know, I actually, maybe last year, I had a really bad dream and I woke up from it and my heart was racing. Like I felt like I had been like whatever the dream was, I felt like I'd been there. So I did some research on that, and your mind really processes your dreams as reality. So you react to these crazy situations that your dream life manifests as though they're like you, your biological response is as though it's really happening to you, which is just insane to me. And I think the dream I had a couple of years ago, I was dreaming that I was being chased or something like that, and I couldn't move. Like somebody was after me, I couldn't move. So my body was physically reacting to thinking that I'm being chased and not being able to escape. So it's just like our poor bodies, when we go through that type of biological response to a dream that is not real, but our heart rate doesn't know it's not real. So it's like our heart rates shoot through the roof. It's
you really feel it because it is real. Have you ever had the dream where you feel like if you do something in your dream, then you know, it's not going to be good for you. You won't wake up.
I don't know if I've had that specific dream.
I think that's the, what's that, that character, Nightmare on Elm Street?
Freddy Krueger?
Yeah, I think it stems from that.
But really?
Yeah, I've had that dream. It's like,
so
if
what
I
is
do
that?
This, I don't know. It's like you're not going to wake up.
Whoa. So in your dream, you know, like, you're dreaming. And so you're making a like as your dream self, you're making a conscious choice. Or you are having to make a decision between this and one of these decisions, you won't wake up?
Right.
Whoa.
And then it gets to the point where I try to stay kind of in that frame of mind, but it never lasts because
right.
eventually you wake up.
Eventually.
Because your brain is starting to take over too much.
Right. Your brain is like, get out of here now, ASAP.
And then there's the time when you have the dream where something is happening and, you know, it may not be a good thing. Or maybe it's a good thing. And then you realize, hey, I'm dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And then you wake up from that, and then you realize, I'm still dreaming.
Right. I know, right? Totally. It's so, so true.
So these are tales from the sleep-deprived folks.
Yes. Yeah, we were talking off air about how we just don't sleep anymore. And I don't know if that's an age thing or what, but a good night's sleep somehow evades us eternally. So... Mm. I don't know. And then you have the dreams that you don't want to wake up from because they're great dreams. Like I often, this is a recurring dream I have. It's almost embarrassing to say this, but I'll say it. I often have a dream that I'm in a relationship with Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is the writer of Hamilton.
Okay.
So, and I love him, like in my real waking life, like he is my, I just think he's brilliant and funny and sweet and smart. And he does all these good causes. Like he's just a good human being. So I have these dreams that like he and I are just in this super happy relationship. And I'm like happier than I've ever been in my life. And then I wake up and it's like, wah, wah. Here I am.
It's not really there.
Not really there. In fact, there's nobody there. It's a big blank space next to me.
Yes,
but that's a story for another day.
Well, sometimes you can conjure those things up or attract those things to you.
True. I do believe in that.
Yeah.
The power of the universe and what we put out, we, you know, attract back to us. So, yeah, I think there's something to that.
All right.
Well, all right.
You know, this being November, lots of stuff coming up, and we'll tell you all about that. And, of course, the election is coming up very soon, so make sure you get out there and voice your choice. Did you get an election?
Voice your choice. I like it.
Well, that's an old thing. I stole it.
I like it anyway.
But did you get a card in the mail telling you where you're supposed to go to vote?
I've gotten 13 billion cards in the mail, and I don't know if I've gotten that one, but I did have somebody canvassing my neighborhood who had a list of each individual addresses and like where their polling place was.
Yeah.
So, yes. And I did vote. I voted this week, actually. I took my son and we went and he just sat there.
But early voting?
Early voting, baby. I'm motivated. So did you get a postcard that said?
Yeah, it told me where I was supposed to go to vote. It's like, I don't want to vote there.
Right. I know.
I want to go to the place over here.
Right. Too bad we don't get that choice.
Well, if you early vote, I guess you can sort of do it that way.
Oh, can you? I didn't know that.
Vote by mail.
Oh, well, sure.
Yeah, so you can avoid that kind of thing. But
I wanted my sticker, though, so I actually went to the polling place.
It's funny because no matter what I'm doing, if I'm involved in media, at some point, at some time over the last past few weeks, a political ad pops up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Pandora this morning, and then all of a sudden, boom,
out of nowhere,
there's a political ad for Illinois. And I'm thinking, this is Pandora.
Everything is targeted. Everything we've all been data mined. They know who we're voting for, when we're voting, where we're voting. That they know all that stuff. And even my son, who is six, he's watching Lego videos on YouTube, and political ads pop up on his Lego videos. Like, it's like he can recite by heart political ads for Peter Roskam. it's crazy. So clearly they're not data mining the right people, because my six-year-old really doesn't have much of a voice in the democracy yet. But someday, teach them young. Get them out there young.
Yeah, get them young.
Get them young. Hook them in.
And let's see. I was reading where I saw that there is a kind of sort of rating that they give everybody.
He's looking for it as he speaks, which is why the breaks in his dialogue.
And I can't find it.
All right.
I was looking here. But yeah, there's some sort of a rating that big business uses to determine how worthy we are regarding what type of ads that we receive.
Interesting.
And if you're a person, like if you are on the phone and you are on hold, some people will wait forever, and other people will just hang up right away. And if they determine that you're a person that hangs up right away, then you'll get a customer service person faster than a person who, will actually sit there and wait.
Like, for what companies?
Well, it's not for any one company, but it's sort of a rating that they have figured out through an algorithm.
So if I were to call, like, AT&T or something, get a pop-up on their computer that I'm one of those suckers that will wait for 20 minutes for a customer service rep?
Something like that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'll have to look into that. That's interesting.
And yeah, but I can't. I was looking here on the web, and I had it earlier, but I don't find it.
I have a feeling that, I think our phones are listening to us all the time, and there's been plenty of evidence to verify that that is actually true. So I bet sometime in the next couple of days we'll get some information will pop up on our phone about this exact subject. I'll keep you posted.
Here it is, Brian. This is what you were looking for when
you
were on the air.
Oh, gee, it just conveniently showed up on my Instagram newsfeed.
All right. Well, anyway, at any rate, if I can find it, we'll come back to it.
Cool.
But what we do know is that today we are honored by having Illinois' Comptroller Susanna Mendoza to talk about the Illinois Comptroller's office.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So the question is, what's the difference between a controller and a comptroller?
That is a good question.
Yes. And the answer is, controller is usually a person who works with a for-profit company, whereas a comptroller is usually a person who works with government or nonprofit.
Oh. So is it the same role? They are just,
right,
depending on whether you're a for-profit or a nonprofit or government entity.
Yeah, it refers to the person who's responsible for all accounting operations.
Very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Learned something new today.
Another question is, what's the difference between a comptroller and a CFO? This could go on and on.
We could really unravel Pandora's box here.
But we'll just leave it right there.
Let's do that.
And, of course, we've got It's Highly Recommended. And we have the awe.
Yes, we do. We have a good one today.
And Luke's Lab. All those things coming up right here on the Beacon, which, incidentally, if you have forgotten already, we'll be moving next month, first Sunday, and we'll be on from 8 until 9. So instead of getting up Saturday listening to us, you can get up a little later on Sunday.
And sleep in a little bit. It's an extra hour of sleep.
Yeah.
There you go. Our first Sunday show will be December 2nd from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m.
A Beacon right here on WCPT.
8:20 a.m.
Thank you.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in business information technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, here at the Chicago Lighthouse and the Beacon, we have been incredibly fortunate to have wonderful friends from the Illinois state. And joining us this morning is our wonderful controller, Susana Mendoza. Susana, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, I know you have had an extensive background here in Illinois. You've been controller since 2016. Prior to that, you were clerk of the city of Chicago from 2011 through 2016. And prior to that, you were in the Illinois State House of Representatives. Now, the first question that I would like to ask you, and the question that a lot of our listeners might be asking is, what does the controller do? What is the controller?
So the controller of the state of Illinois is the state's chief fiscal officer. It's the person responsible for managing the state's finances and, most importantly, for paying the state's bills.
Mm-hmm. Very important. Very important. So, you know, a while ago, we had Treasurer Frerix. We had him on the Beacon about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for me personally, Susana, one of the questions that I have and one of the confusion is, what is the difference between the treasurer and the controller?
Sure, there's a big difference. Uh-huh. We're both financial officers, so that's what we have in common.
Sure.
But the biggest difference is that the controller is responsible for managing the state's finances and paying the state's bills. Mm-hmm. In other words, controlling the state's checkbook, whereas the treasurer is responsible for investing the state's money.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a reason why those two offices were created to be separate. And that's because many years ago, they used to be held by the same person. So there was the position used to be called the Auditor of Public Accounts, and
uh-huh.
it did both treasurer and controller functions. And the Auditor of Public Accounts in Illinois, his name was Orville Hodge. And in 1952, he was elected and served until 1956, at which point he went to jail for embezzling $6.15 million, which today would be the equivalent of about $56 million. So it was a humongous scandal. And as a result of that embezzlement, which, you know, was so serious, and it happened because the person who controls the checkbook also had access to the money.
Mm.
He was writing himself checks, right? So the state legislature in 1970 passed a new law that separated those functions into two separate and distinct offices, the treasurer and the controller, so that never again could taxpayer dollars be in the hands of the same person who has access to the state's checkbook. So it was a very good policy. It is meant to serve as a strong internal control from one office to the other, and also serve as an incredibly valuable check and balance to protect taxpayers' dollars.
Now, something that has been going around, I know that your Republican opponent, Darlene Sanger, one of the things that has been, you know, that a lot of listeners or a lot of individuals might ask is, you know, is the office of the controller and the treasurer,
Are both of these offices important given the strapped financial situation here that we have in the state? What is your point of view?
Sure. I think they're incredibly important. Again, the very super important checks and balances that the offices provide to each other make sure that we're not ever embezzling or creating a situation of fraud with taxpayer dollars.
Sure.
That's pretty priceless. Not to mention that, you know, if you think that stuff can't happen anymore, well, it just did happen again in 2012. Mm-hmm. In the town of Dixon, Illinois, some of your audience might remember the name Rita Crundwell, and she was arrested and convicted of embezzling $54 million of taxpayer dollars from the people of Dixon, Illinois, a small little town. It's famous for Ronald Reagan's birthplace. But mm-hmm. more importantly, you know, $54 million to a small town was embezzled because the controller and the treasurer were the same person, Rita Crundwell. So the two largest government embezzlement schemes in the history of the United States of America have been very costly to taxpayers, but unfortunately, they both happened here in the state of Illinois. And the markets themselves, you know, the markets are the ones who determine what our credit ratings look like.
Sure.
Standard & Poor has already said that they believe that if the state of Illinois were to move in the direction of less checks and balances and weaker internal controls by consolidating the offices, that that might be seen as a negative outlook, something that would make them look at our credit in a negative way. Mm-hmm. And that would certainly cost potentially hundreds of million dollars in penalties to Illinois, whereas the perceived minute savings that could come from consolidating a few, getting rid of a few positions is certainly not worth the risk that we put taxpayers' dollars at.
Sure, sure.
It could be more costly, actually, at the end of the day is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
If the markets were to turn our credit rating further negative, because, you know, it becomes much more expensive for us to access capital that we might need for the functioning of government. So not a good idea.
Mm, absolutely. Now, you know, as our listeners know, elections are literally right around the corner. They're this upcoming Tuesday, and you have been the controller, as I mentioned, since 2016. During that term, you have helped with many legislative initiatives. What are some of the accomplishments that you're most proud of?
Oh, well, thank you for that question. I'm most proud of the fact that my office, you know, and I have led a transparency revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so incredibly important to shine a light on how taxpayer dollars are being spent. Because when you do that, essentially, sunlight is a natural disinfectant. And I believe that by shining light on the state's financial picture, we're able to take care of some problems in terms of deficit spending and how we're actually utilizing taxpayer dollars, and let the taxpayers know about that. Like in the past, and even when I took office,
sure,
I, as the state's chief fiscal officer, the person responsible for managing the state through the worst fiscal crisis in its history, could not see the extent of the liabilities that the state was facing. And it's so crazy to think that the person whose job it is to manage the accounts had limited visibility of the state's accounts.
Sure.
I passed, as part of this transparency revolution, the Debt Transparency Act, which requires monthly reporting of the state's financials. For example, here at the Lighthouse,
mm-hmm.
I'd get phone calls from people saying, well, you owe us X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
We need that to be able to provide the services to our, you know, our patients or our constituents. Yet, where's our money? And I would look in our system, and I wouldn't be able to see all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because many of those invoices had not made it to my office yet. They were still at the governor's agency level, and it's crazy that I would not be able to see those bills so that I could then prioritize those payments. So
mm-hmm.
I have a lot greater visibility now as a result of passing the Debt Transparency Act and other transparency-related bills that allow me to have a better handle of the state's finances so that I could do a better job representing all of you.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations, and thanks for all your hard work on this. And now, you know, you're running for re-election. Why should Illinoisans vote for you?
Well, I think like I said, I've done about 10 years worth of work in about less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been the most difficult job in state government to have to navigate the state through the worst fiscal crisis in its history. And that has been the job of the Illinois Comptroller. So I do feel that I have more than stepped up to the plate because I love the people of this state and I love fighting for them. And I've had to serve as that last line of defense against an administration that has not put people first,
mm-hmm.
that has eliminated services for people with disabilities at a time when we should be investing even more in our human capital. And I believe that folks, you know, I've really reprioritized The way that the Comptroller's Office in Illinois spends or prioritizes its funding to different entities that are owed money. And I started by, of course, taking care of things like the debt service and the pension payments that have to be made in order for us to maintain our credit rating, which is already so poor, right? But more importantly, we have to protect it to make sure it doesn't get further dinged with the markets. But most importantly, I have made a priority of anyone who is in hospice care, nursing homes, or is a child or adult with disabilities, and anyone who cares for children or adults with disabilities, because I believe that those communities have not had the strong level of advocacy with their government officials as they should. And I get to be those eyes and ears and voice for many of the people who have felt voiceless in this current administration. So it's been my greatest source of pride to be able to champion causes that are both morally but also fiscally responsible, and that's taking care of people.
Now, here's my question that, you know, a lot of our listeners have asked when, you know, I told them that I would be having this interview with you. Mm-hmm. Are you ever, or are you contemplating ever running for mayor of Chicago?
Well, obviously, the mayor's announcement was a huge surprise to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I am running for re-election as controller. I've not ruled out anything, but I can tell you that the next 4 days are fully focused on the job at hand. And really, for me, it's not even just about me. It's about the race. It's about the entire ticket in the state of Illinois needs to, in my opinion, be a Democratic ticket that puts people first. And I've been working very hard, traveling the entire state of Illinois, every nook and cranny of it, advocating for, you know, not just myself as the strong fiscal watchdog that I've been for taxpayers, but to make sure that we elect an attorney general who will stand up for people and support their health care and not try to take us backwards and fight for us, fight for women, fight for folks with disabilities, fight for children, stand up to Donald Trump and to an administration that has not really been pro-people. I want a new governor who will work with me and all the other elected officials to actually move the state forward and not continue to triple the backlog of bills or to do any more further damage to our bill backlog. We want to actually bring those bills down and get people paid and let people live the best quality of life that they can in this state. We have a beautiful state. I'd like a governor who actually believes that and talks about all the beautiful things and the amazing people and resources that we have here and how we can make our state better instead of constantly talking about all the things that are bad or even saying things that are just not true about the quality of the people and the resources in this state. So I'm very focused on electing a new governor. I'm getting reelected as controller. I have a vision in place for this office and where I'd like it to go. But again, any other future plans, if any, will be talked about or, you know, addressed or thought about after this election.
Well, great. And we will keep everyone here on the Beacon informed.
Yeah, I'll let you know if anything changes.
Well, I know, Controller, that you are pressed on time and we appreciate your time. But briefly, a little bit about your personal background, the woman, Susana Mendoza. What are some of your hobbies, your background?
Well, I love to play soccer. You know, I've played soccer since I was a little kid.
Right.
And when I first wanted to play, it turns out there were no girls playing at the time. My brother was on a little soccer team, and I showed up to pick him up from practice with my parents one day and saw all these kids running around kicking ball. And I thought, whoa, I want to play that. It looks like so much fun. Sure. And my mom at the time, of course, like most mothers who had never seen girl soccer, said, oh, honey, I'm sorry, but, you know, you can't play soccer. Only boys play soccer. And I said, well, you know, I really want to play. And of course, as a little 6-year-old threw a tantrum or 7-year-old. And my dad, I think more just to keep me quiet, said, hey, well, you know, let her play. If she wants to play, let's sign her up. And maybe she gets kicked in the shins and doesn't want to play again. But you know, you never know. Let's not tell her no. Let's let her try. So
that's it.
Yeah, they signed me up. And guess what? I kicked those ballet slippers off. I put on some cleats. And yeah, I did get kicked in the shins. But as I joke around, I just learned to kick back harder. And
there you go.
Of course, play by the rules. It's being facetious here. But at the end of the day, learning the skills on the soccer field of discipline, of teamwork, of leadership, individual leadership, along with, you know, bringing up your team, respect for your opposition and for yourself and your teammates on and off off the field, loving to be competitive. All of those things set me up for success to be a leader in politics. And so, you know, it's interesting to see that a lot of the highest ranking female politicians in our country were former collegiate athletes or really involved in sports. And many of us came up playing with all boys. And so we learned to not just play, but succeed and thrive in a male environment. And certainly that has helped me to be a good leader for Illinois, whether I was a state rep at the time for those 10 years or as city clerk, and certainly now battling all the time with a governor who really hasn't been very inclusive of people. So I'm ready. I'm not shy to take on a fight when it means fighting for the people of this state.
Wonderful. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add or share with our listeners?
Well, I would just love to say that it's been a pleasure to be here today to see the beautiful work that the Lighthouse does. I've been a huge proponent of trying to prioritize payments to this institution because you do God's work. And I just want everyone listening to know that no one is alone, that we are here for you and our state values you and is going to make sure to keep prioritizing.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming over to the Lighthouse and for being a friend of the Chicago Lighthouse and people with disabilities.
For sure. Thank you.
Everyone, this has been The Beacon on WCPT 820 AM. We will be right back.
Simplify your life by opening a My Social Security account, allowing you immediate access to your personal Social Security information. During your working years, you can use it to view your Social Security statement, to check your earnings record and see estimates of the future retirement benefits you and your family may receive. If you receive benefits, you can get a benefit verification, check your benefit and payment information, change your address and phone number, and even change your direct deposit information. Open a My Social Security account today at www.socialsecurity.gov/myaccount.
Welcome back to The Beacon. I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And I'm Brian Hawkins.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Good. You're over there making up song lyrics. It's cracking me up.
Yeah, I do. I had another song I wanted to sing, but I don't know if it'll be respectful or not.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you enjoy that in your head and keep it going.
Okay. I'll share later.
I look forward to that.
Okay.
We're heading into What's Highly Recommended, yes?
Yes. And I think they're talking about a new theater that has sort of a unique take on a play and how you can enjoy it. So this is something I think everybody will enjoy.
Good Saturday morning, everyone. I am Sandy Murillo.
I am Brett Shishkoff.
And welcome to It's Highly Recommended.
Yes.
How are you, Brett?
I am doing well.
I know you went to the Straw Dog.
I went to Straw Dog Theater. A lot of people probably haven't heard of Straw Dog Theater.
I hadn't personally.
It's a relatively new-ish theater.
Yeah.
They actually were doing a performance that was, it kind of piqued my interest mainly because on the Access Calendar, anyone who knows about the Access Calendar that the Chicago Consortium does for the theaters, they had like a week-long audio description and touch tour that they were offering for their performance, and it was called Mask Macabre.
Okay.
And so I was interested in it just because I've never gone to the theater, but also it had a different type of concept. It's kind of like a walk-through, choose-your-own-adventure type play.
Oh, okay.
The story, it begins with you in the bar lobby area, and you find out that you are actually at a party for a company that is under scrutiny by CNN. It's being investigated by the FBI. And all of the celebrities have basically pulled out, and you have been brought in to kind of fill in as basically just as partygoers for this specific art event that's going on at an art studio, and so you can actually pick and choose which characters you want to follow. And so there's about three or four different characters that you can be able to track their specific stories. I ended up just following one, a couple who ended up, their names were Bernice and Eli. Eli is the artist who was basically that made all of the art for this specific art studio where this party is being held at.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernice ends up being the girlfriend to Eli. And so this story was kind of fun. It has some sexy lust type stuff. There's some drugs, alcohol. So it's not for kids. That's sure. definitely for sure. Mm-hmm. Some of the content, it could make some people uncomfortable. You are part of a masquerade party, so you're wearing a mask. So these are things that you want to take into account if you're going to be going to something like this. It actually went through Halloween. But talking to the theater, they actually said that it was so popular that there is a good chance that they might do something like this next year, if not the same play. Yeah, I got there early. I got a little bit of a walkthrough of the way that the theater was set up. So they had about 6 or 7 different rooms. Each one of them had a specific color. Okay. To kind of give you an idea. So you had a black room, you had the blue room. Mm-hmm. And so you're going through and they kind of show you where the play is going to take place, and it's spread throughout these 5 different rooms. Mm-hmm. So obviously if I was sitting, I would only be able to follow one of the stories maybe. Yeah. But they move around in the different, rooms throughout the hour long performance that they're putting on. Mm-hmm. So I had an audio describer who was there, and she was also the one who led me around doing the touch tour. Her name was Emily. And so she would whisper to me, like, as things are going on ahead of me, following Eli and Bernice, say they started, like, kissing after a certain situation happens. She would just whisper, Bernice grabs Eli, and they are currently making out. That would be something she'd whisper in my ear as it's happening, like, literally a foot or two in front of me.
Sure.
But I had such a good time doing this show, like being able to have something a little bit different than just sitting in a seat for 2 hours. Mm. It was kind of spooky. They had some kind of lights came turned off and some people started disappearing all of a sudden.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, kind of has that, like, they compare it to if Carrie met Eyes Wide Shut. So Eyes Wide Shut is a movie that Tom Cruise was in that was based around a masquerade party, and Carrie is an old, like, Stephen King novel that was turned into a movie as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, has some of that spookiness to it.
Sure.
But each story is different. So, like, I could go back next year and go a couple times and have a different type of story given to me. So that's what's kind of nice about it, is that each time you go, you could actually go there a couple times with friends or family, and uh-huh. you could follow different characters each time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it sounds like it was quite the experience. And, you know, on time for Halloween and something different. And, I mean, it's perfect in every way. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it fit perfectly for the Halloween
exactly.
season for sure.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you have it, everyone. And, you know, we're actually out of time, Brett, but I did want to send a special thank you. As our listeners might remember, last weekend I might have mentioned, I don't recall, but I was at McCormick Place. I had the wonderful honor of speaking with several members of the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Basically, I spoke with them about assistive technology and different resources available to patients with vision loss. So I want to give a special thank you and shout out to the AAO for reaching out to the Lighthouse and asking me to participate in this panel. You know, it's something that I deeply enjoy and appreciate these opportunities.
That's good. Also, just real quick, if people didn't know, Chicago Humanities Festival is out, and this is the first year that they're offering audio description for their speakers. You can actually go to ChicagoHumanitiesFestival.com, and they have a whole long list of speakers. I'm actually checking out Tom Hanks tonight, so that will be fun. Mm-hmm. They also have a couple talks, people who are blind, talking about accessibility,
okay.
And then one person is also talking about the adoption of waypoints for, like, smart cities and that type of thing, and
yeah.
growing to become more accessible as cities move forward into that technology gets developed. So
right,
those are a couple things to keep an eye open for if you're looking for something to do over the next week or so.
Well, we expect a full report next week, Brett.
I will do my best.
All right. Well, everyone, You have been listening once again to The Beacon. I am Sandy Murillo.
I am Brett Shishkoff.
And we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Erica Borgren, Iraq veteran and director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission is to empower veterans and their families to thrive. Our agency is home to a team of veterans whose sole job is to help other veterans. But we can't do this work alone. We need Illinois veterans to stand up and be counted so we can better understand and serve our veteran community. You have already stood up to answer the call to service. Now, stand up and be counted to help the entire veteran community. Visit veterans.illinois.gov.
Well, welcome back, folks, here at The Beacon on this Saturday morning, first Saturday in November. And, of course, also the last first Saturday that we will be on at this time slot, because
that's too much math for this early in the morning.
We're moving to Sunday, starting the first Sunday in December.
December 2nd.
And you are absolutely right.
Thank you so much.
And that will be from 8 to 9 p.m. So
9 a.m. 9 a.m.
What did I say?
P.M.
Oh, well.
8 to 9 a.m.
That's correct.
Okay, good.
I'm just fiddling around here with the computer, so I'm doing a
couple distracted.
Things at the same time, yeah.
Multitasking is not his strong suit, but that's okay. We love him for other reasons.
No, it's not. And one of the reasons people love me is because of my love of sports. And coming up on the 18th of November, if you're a hockey fan, the Chicago Blackhawks will take on the Minnesota Wild, and it's a fundraiser for the Chicago Lighthouse. All proceeds benefit the Chicago Lighthouse, and it's November 18th at 5 p.m., and $91 a ticket at the United Center. Everyone will be sitting in section 324, so I guess that's a good section. And prior to the game, there will be a pregame event, MB Ice Arena, so that should be interesting. And guests can use the ice from 3 to 4 p.m. And there's also a raffle for tickets to the 2019 Blackhawks game. And also an art autographed clock that's been built by the Lighthouse. Free parking's available at MB Ice Arena. For more information or to buy tickets, please call Lion Chris Coleman. Area code 708-785-5726. So, you know, hockey fans, there you go.
That's it.
Yeah. Now, what's coming up next is one of the most anticipated and
beloved
segments of the show.
I do say so myself.
Yeah, we get an opportunity to get the warm fuzzies.
The warm fuzzies in a time when we desperately need it.
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here she is, Ms. Lainey Kleeman and The All Fact.
Thank you, my friend. 87-year-old walks to buy Mega Million lottery ticket, breaks his hip. Then guess what happens? In an incredible twist of fate, this 87-year-old's misfortune has resulted in a huge financial windfall. Our friend, Earl Livingston, was walking to a store last week to buy a Mega Millions lottery ticket because, you know, it was up over $1 billion last week, right? So he was walking to get his piece of the pie when he fell and broke his hip before he had a chance to buy his ticket. After he was taken to a local hospital, he told his story to the nurses and expressed his disappointment about how he broke his hip before he was able to buy his ticket. One of the nurses then asked if he would like to join their employee lottery pool, which included 141 other workers. Livingston obliged. And it's a good thing that he did, because guess what? The employee lottery pool ended up winning a $1 million jackpot. The staff have since told news outlets that they believe Livingston was their good luck charm. And upon telling him the good news, they said that seeing the smile on his face was payment enough. His niece said, "I didn't believe him when I got there. I thought he was confused, maybe from the pain meds." And then the staff came into the room and they were saying congratulations. And I was like, wow, he really did win. So our friend, our 87-year-old friend, walking to the store to get himself a piece of the $1 billion lottery pie, falls and breaks his hip before getting a ticket, goes to the hospital, enters the employee lottery pool, and they strike a $1 million jackpot. So between 141 employees, that comes out to a couple thousand apiece probably, but still, who wins a $1 million jackpot in a lottery? So all's well that ends well with our friend who's hopefully hip is all better and healing and he's coming home a little bit richer.
Yeah, and that'll help go towards the
bill. I was just thinking that as those words are coming out of my mouth. But where I'm coming from is like, no, this is the awe factor. This is a happy story. I don't want to focus on the medical bills, but you and I, my friend, yep.
Well, that is a happy story.
It is a happy story, right?
Medical bills are expensive sometimes. And wow, that's incredible. But yeah, he had to share it with all those folks.
I'm checking my, not 100 million. I'm checking my calculator right now to see what $1 million divided by 141 employees. So, you know, that's 7,000 apiece, like 7,100 apiece. So,
yeah. Well, it's not really a million because they probably all took a lump sum.
Probably.
So it's less than that. So,
and they all take their taxes out. So, you know, he probably came home $5,000 richer than when he, but still it's 5,000 bucks. But yes, to your point, hospital bills, who knows? Hopefully he's well insured and doesn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. And maybe only a portion of it has to go to the hospital and he can blow it on whatever else he wants.
Whatever he wants.
Maybe more lottery tickets.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And chances are good that had he have made it to buy his lottery ticket for the $1 billion jackpot, he probably would not have won, right? So at least this way he won something.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's just like I love stories of that just kind of like twists of fate, those serendipitous events that lead to something good. So that's this week's The Awe Factor.
And he broke his hip.
Yeah, his hip. Poor guy.
That's not good.
Walking to get his lottery ticket. But all's well that ends well. I'm going to go. There isn't a follow-up to his health at this point, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that all is well with our friend.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that story.
My pleasure.
And may all of us have luck when we buy our lottery ticket.
Yes, may we all.
All right. So we're going to take a break, but we're coming back. We still got more right here on The Beacon.
I'm Dr. Linda Van Eldick, a biomedical scientist supported by the American Health Assistance Foundation. I'm dedicated to educating the public because it's important for all of us to understand this debilitating disease. I conduct research aimed at discovering new and effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. This is critical because every 70 seconds, someone in America is diagnosed with Alzheimer's. That's more than 1,000 people a day. Preliminary data show that exercise, a healthy diet, and keeping your mind active may help reduce your risk. At our website, ahaf.org, experts will answer your questions and address your concerns. Find out about promising research the foundation funds and learn how to live with or care for someone with the disease. Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for a free brochure on understanding Alzheimer's disease. That's 1-800-437-2423.
Welcome back. We're here. We're wrapping it up. We're heading into our final segment of the day with our friend, Luke Scriven.
And welcome in to Luke's laboratory, folks. Good morning, Luke. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Halloween has been and gone, and now looking forward to Thanksgiving.
Ah, yes.
Yes, and my trip back to England to see my parents.
Oh, that should be good. You're going to hobnob with the royals?
Obviously, yeah. I'll be visiting them in their palace and seeing Meghan's wedding rings and that type of thing. Yeah,
That should be fun. All right. Now, what about assistive technology-wise?
Well, this week I wanted to talk about the difference between older CCTVs and newer CCTVs and who older ones might be suitable for, because at the moment we have got a few used units, older CCTVs, that could work well for a lot of people. So I just thought I'd talk about the differences and let people know a little bit about that.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, so with the newer CCTVs, this being 2018, they are, of course, high definition these days. So we have the high definition cameras, and we also have quite large monitors on them these days. So those are the types of things that you'll see in new CCTVs. And with the high definition cameras, you get a very nice image. But the place where they really shine, and it might sound a bit counterintuitive, the place that they really shine is at lower magnifications. And so it used to be that with the older CCTVs, the smallest size that they might go to might be 4x magnification or maybe even 5x magnification. And if they did go lower than that, the picture would be very blurry, so you couldn't really read it. With the newer high-definition models, you can go down to maybe 2x magnification, maybe even less, and the picture will remain very sharp. Now, you might be thinking, okay, well, who's that going to work for? Because 2x magnification isn't that much. And this is true. The people it really benefits are people with things like glaucoma, for example, where the individual still has decent central visual acuity, but they really benefit from a little bit of magnification and mostly from contrast enhancement. So false colors like high contrast white letters on a black background work particularly well. And so with modern CCTVs, when you get this combination of a large screen and a high definition camera, you can see the text very well at lower magnifications. And for people who can read it like that, that means that they don't have to move the document as much underneath the camera, which makes it a more pleasant reading experience. So, high definition camera, large screen, particularly good for people who don't need too much magnification. And where that leaves us is that with the older units, where they start at higher magnifications, those still actually work very well for people with things like macular degeneration who need more magnification because they still look great at the higher magnifications. And so if you zoom in to, say, 7x using a standard definition CCTV and you zoom into 7x using a high definition CCTV, there isn't really that much to choose from between them. They both look very good. And so if you do have something like macular degeneration and you do need magnification maybe starting in the range of 5x and upwards, then you will find that actually a standard definition CCTV works absolutely fine for what you want it for. And the older units, they will tend to have the standard definition. And so here at the Lighthouse at the moment, I think we have 3 or 4 older units for sale, which are standard definition and which would work great for a lot of people with macular degeneration. And of course, if you buy an older unit, which has been either is an ex-demonstrator unit or a used unit, then you will save yourself a lot of money. And so I think the units that we have at the moment are right around $795, whereas a new unit might cost you anywhere from $2,000 upward. So I just thought it would be interesting for people to learn about that. You might think that you have to buy the latest and greatest, but in fact that might not be the case. And of course you can come and try everything here at the Lighthouse, sit down with me and see what works best for you.
And when you come, you can come right into the store or make an appointment.
Best thing, if you want to sit down with me, is to make an appointment, just so that I will definitely be available. You can, though, just walk into the store and have a look at the units which are set up. And we do have the new units set up, and we do have some of the older units set up as well. And so you are welcome to come in and try those for yourself. But if you want me to sit down with you, definitely make an appointment. And you can call me at 312-997-3649.
So that begs the question, this week, did you have a walk-in or was it an appointment for your...
Customer of the week. And yes, it was an appointment. And it was actually in Indiana, in Gary, Indiana. And I went to see a lady by the name of Viola Joyner. And I've worked with her a few times before. Very nice lady. She's a lot of fun. She actually kind of reminds me of my grandma, which is kind of nice. And she has a CCTV called the Optelec Clearview C. And she told me it wasn't working. And I was a little bit confused about what was going on with it. So I happened to be in Indiana anyway, close by in Hammond, delivering a piece of equipment to somebody else. So I dropped on by her place. And it turned out that... the unit that she has a little remote control, and the remote control takes batteries, and the batteries had run out of power. So it was very easy to fix her problem, which was nice. Although it did take 2 CR2025 batteries, which are kind of unusual. But I managed to swap those out for her, and it was very nice to see her. So I wanted to give her a shout out, and she was my customer of the week.
You know, there is a song, Going Back to Indiana. I don't know if you're familiar.
I am not familiar with that song, no. It sounds good, though.
It's Going back to Gary, Indiana,
okay.
Actually.
Yeah.
That's the reason I brought that up. 1970s, a group called the Jackson Five, maybe.
Well, it wasn't Michael Jackson from Gary, so then the rest of the Jackson Five were, I assume?
Yes.
Okay, there we go.
There you go. Oh, wow.
There you go. I knew something.
All right, so coming up... Well, there's no roadshows left, so...
No, we have no roadshows, sadly. The last one was this week, and now we will be on hiatus until probably March, April of next year. So we'll start scheduling the shows for next year in the coming months. And as soon as we do have another roadshow, of course, I will talk about it on this show.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul, Computer Information Systems, and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also, going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
And that's it for us today. Thank you to Dr. Janet Slick, who's, you know, keeping us on the air all these years. Support week after week, month after month. We're still here. So we're very grateful to all of the team that keeps us here every week. And that'll do it for us. We'll be here same time, same place next week. This week, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, stay warm, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.